The next case to be heard this morning is number 2020-541, the Village of Obetz versus McLean, the Tax Commissioner. And I again want to say for the record at the outset that the argument is being live streamed. We're doing it by video conference and it will be archived on the court's website. We'll hear first from the Village of Obetz, Mr. Reed.
May it please the court. My name is Frank Reed, Frost Brown Todd, on behalf of the Village of Obetz. Good morning, Your Honor. This is a case of first impression. It's undisputed that the original final determination, which was dated October 13th, 1999, issued by then Tax Commissioner Tom Zano, granted a tax exemption on this subject parcel for 30 years. The ordinance was passed April 7th, 1997, and had you used that date, it would have expired April 7th, 2027. But because improvements didn't occur until the property until 1999, that was the date that the action of exemption started. We know it's also undisputed that the Franklin County Auditor read the final determination issued by Zano, placed the property on the exempt list for 30 years. And that was made clear by Exhibit D that we presented at the evidentiary hearing before the Board of Tax Appeals. It's also undisputed that the original ordinance passed by the Village of Obetz called for 15 years. January 1st, 1999 would have expired December 31st, 2014. That's ordinance number 6-97. Exhibit F was an important document. It showed on June 13th, 2017, 1109, that a person from the Ohio Department of Taxation had spoken with the Franklin County Auditor's people and said, I'm waiting to hear word from Stephanie Stoltz-Weinkoop with the state of Ohio to see if we can include 2015 and 16 with the extension of a TIF via the Obetz ordinance. It wasn't let 2 weeks later, on June 25th, 2017, at 2:14, Rebecca Werthman wrote a second email addressed to the Village of Obetz that said, I've heard back from the department. She indicated if you pass an ordinance before the end of the year and refile the exemption application with us by December 31st, 2017, they, meaning the Ohio Department of Taxation, should be able to re-TIF these parcels for 2015, 2016, 2017. The only way, Your Honor, this court can ignore this testimony is if this court were to overrule the well-settled law of Orme versus Lindley, a case decided in 1982, which has not been criticized or overruled. And that case says promissory estoppel does apply to the Board of Tax Appeals. So, Your Honor, we have four issues today for the court. Number one, can a tax commissioner, by issuing a final determination on May 31st, 2018, that's 19 years later, revise its prior final determination dated October 13th, 1999? We submit the answer to that, Your Honor, is no. And the only way to revise a final determination, so says Revised Code 5713.08, is if you do it on January 1st, which didn't occur here.
Well, Mr. Reed, can I take you back to that 1999 determination by Tax Commissioner Zano, okay?
Yes. And
doesn't it say, it says 30 years or, which, you know, whichever comes sooner, 30 years is the longest the exemption could run. And then it says, or that point in time, when there's no longer a service payment obligation, the obligation to make service payments.
Thank you, Your Honor. You're exactly right. Let me quote the exact journal entry for you. Commencing in the first year in which real property would be taxable, were that property not exempted for taxation, and ending the earlier of 30 years from such date of passage, or on the date in which the city can no longer require semi-annual service payments in lieu of taxes.
So what does the record show about the date at which the service payment obligation expired.
The record shows that the final determination from the tax commissioner said this is to extend for 30 years. There's no dispute for that whatsoever, Your Honor. So what we would say is, if that's what determines here, the final determination, and that's what the auditor put on their tax list, then the tax commissioner had an obligation to at least examine to see if the village validly extended that time period from the ordinance, because it really depends on what controls here. Is it what the tax commissioner says or what the ordinance says? And the tax commissioner, we believe the tax commissioner. We asked them what to do. They told us, they said, you can extend a TIF. We know that's true all the time in Ohio. TIFs get extended all the time. And for a long time, Your Honor, there wasn't a specific procedure that told you how you extend a TIF. We know that today, if this were after October 17th, 2019, the Ohio General Assembly has passed a statute, 570951, and it says you can extend a TIF anytime as long as you do three things. One, you can extend it by an additional 30 years. So, I mean, this seems a little unusual to me, but if the TIF were originally 30 years, you could extend it, so says the statute, by another 30 years. That's a total of 60 years. If the surmits payments exceed 1.5 million, and if they don't exceed 1.5 million, you can still extend it so long as the extension occurs after January 1st, 2021, and you compensate the school district. So the evidence here is that the village of Obetz looked at the tax commissioner's determination, looked at what the auditor had said, made a specific inquiry, relied to their detriment on what the auditor told them, believed that the auditor was authorized to tell them this after conferring with the Department of Taxation, and passed this resolution prior to the end of 2017. So what's interesting is the third issue for us is, can a tax—
Excuse me, Mr. Reed, you agreed with me when you read the 1999 tax commissioner entry that it is the exemption expired under that entry at the earlier of 30 years or at the point in time when there was no more service payment obligation.
Thank you, Your Honor. What I'm saying to this court is it doesn't expire by its own volition. It says either 30 years or if the city can no longer require same annual service. And before that event occurred, the city extended and amended its ordinance to extend the TIF.
So how do we know, is it in the record when that service payment obligation expired? Because wouldn't that be part of the TIF agreement?
There is a TIF agreement, and I can tell you that we submitted several exhibits in the evidentiary hearing. The exhibits were labeled A through R, and we showed the notice of tax increment financing from the village to the Board of Education. We showed the ordinance itself. We showed then the emails and eventually the final determination. So we submit, Your Honor, there's ample evidence in the record that says this TIF was to go on for 30 years. The ordinance says it was supposed to be 15 years, and prior to the 30 year being expired, the village of Obetz amended its ordinance to make sure that all the world knew, look, there's more public improvements that need to be paid for by this TIF.
Well, the documents that you read that are in the record, none of them is the actual TIF agreement, the original TIF agreement from the late 1990s with Goodyear. Right, so we don't know what that agreement says about the service payment obligation.
I'm glad you brought that up, Your Honor. You know, it was frustrating for us that the Department of Taxation, when they put the record together, they didn't even include the 1999 final determination. We think that was a mistake, and I think the court has correctly pointed out that it was also a mistake for the tax department not to include the TIF agreement itself. Let me tell you what the board relied on. The Board of Tax Appeals issued its opinion March 22nd, 2020, and they looked at the final determination. They said, look, there's two issues. There's 5709.40B, which says, we don't think the things that you've listed are specific enough. The Board of Tax Appeals didn't deal with that issue, but
you're referring to the improvements, the list of improvements.
That's right, Your Honor. The Board of Tax Appeals didn't rely on that, but we believe that the evidence was clear that when you read the language, it specifically says you shall designate the specific public infrastructure improvements made. And when you compare the original list of improvements to the second, they're both very, very specific. And in fact, there's nothing that says if you reference and basically mimic the statute, that is Revised Code 5709.40A7 and Revised Code 133.15B, there's nothing that says how specific you have to be. There's no case law that says, oh, that's not specific enough. That there's simply no argument that this wasn't specific. But let me jump to the real crux. The real crux from the Board of Tax Appeals opinion is 5709.40G. And in that language, they talk about retroactivity. But let me point the court to the actual language. It says in the first sentence, an exemption from taxation granted on this section commences with the year tax specified. So what we're really worried about is not when does this TIF commence? We all know that. When's it end? But the language says this section commences with the tax year specified in the ordinance, so long as the year specified in the ordinance commences after the effective date. But read the second sentence, Your Honor. It says, if the ordinance specifies a year commencing before the effective date of the resolution or specifies no year whatsoever, the exemption commences with the tax year in which an exempt improvement first appears on the tax list in duplicate. We know from Exhibit D that the county auditor put this property on the tax duplicate in 1999. And so again, for the state to rely on this language, we don't think is persuasive. But the second sentence, and if you didn't believe that, the third sentence says, with respect to the exemption of improvements to parcels under B of this section, which this case falls under, the ordinance may allow for the exemption to commence in a different tax years on a parcel by parcel basis with exemption term specified for each parcel.
Let me ask you another question along these lines. The main years at issue here are 2015, 2016, and 2017.
That's right, Your Honor.
And the ordinance that amended the earlier ordinance was passed in 2017.
That's right, Your Honor.
So the tax commissioner's theory would be that no new TIF exemption could begin until the following year, right? The following tax year after 2017.
That's their argument. It's our belief there's no support for that, but keep going.
No, that's it. I just wanted to ask you whether the village wants the exemption, even if it doesn't cover 2015, 2016, and 2017, because the theory is it extends it all the way out to the 30-year limit of the 2020s.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me say it this way. The Village of Obetz believes that it had a TIF that was valid and lawful, that the TIF should have been extended. And here's the public reason why. There's no public policy served by not allowing the Village of Obetz to extend and amend its TIF. I mean, number one, there was no objection by the Hamilton County School District. In fact, we put into evidence Exhibit 11, an agreement with the school district dated January 22nd, 2018, that says, we consent. We're getting our compensation. There was no objection by any person at a hearing, which the TIF required at a hearing. Certainly no objection by Goodyear. No citizen, no neighbor objected. In fact, Your Honor, this benefits the Village of Obetz, because as you saw, there was minutes that the state put into evidence, and the minutes showed that the village of Obet said, look, there's more public improvements that need to be paid for by this TIF. We need to extend it.
Let me ask you one more question, Mr. Reed. This exemption application is brought solely by the village, and the current owner of the property is not a party to the exemption case, right?
The current owner of the property is not a party. I think the school district entered in, but they basically said, you know, if this TIF is not approved, we want our money. I'm here to say that they're getting their money either way.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Reed.
I'd like to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Mr. Reed, you may have, I'll give you a minute at the end. Mr. Kim, thank we'll you. Hear from you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. I have several points that I want to make in response to Mr. Reed's opening, but most importantly, this is not a case of first impression. This is a case about the tax commissioner's province over real property exemption decisions. More specifically, it's about one discrete question, whether the tax commissioner correctly denied Obetz's application for exemption because it failed to satisfy requirements set forth in revised quote 570940. The BTA correctly affirmed the denial of this exemption, just as the tax commissioner has found in his final determination that's being reviewed here. The BTA held that the plain language of 570940 did not permit Obetz to retroactively extend and modify an already expired TIF. Now, for all the arguments that Obetz makes, has made in these proceedings, and frankly, most of them weren't raised in the BTA notice of appeal, so the BTA lacked jurisdiction over them. It's telling that the one argument that Obetz never made, at least until today, is about the plain language of 570940. When Obetz applied for exemption originally, back in 2017, it did so with 570940 as its sole basis. But before the BTA, Obetz argued that 570940 doesn't apply. It basically pulled a rug out from its own application. And of course now, again, until this morning, Obetz had basically been silent on any discussion of 570940. So since the question before this court is whether the BTA correctly affirmed the denial of exemption under 570940, the answer is a resounding yes. Now, since Mr. Reed did get into the plain language or the language of the statute, let's do that. We, as discussed in our brief, 570940 provides on multiple occasions that exemption will commence only after the ordinance's effective date. And it says, discussed earlier, exemption commences with the tax year specified in the ordinance, so long as the year specified in the ordinance commences after the effective date of the ordinance. That clearly is not the case, and Mr. Reed would not disagree with that. But then the next sentence, which he points to, says if the ordinance specifies an earlier year, then the exemption commences with the tax year when the exempted improvements first appear on the tax list. But there's one more provision then there that Mr. Reed didn't cover, which is that, and that commences after the effective date of the ordinance. Again, there is that after the effective date of the ordinance. The last thing then on the plain language of the statute is that it speaks also to when the exemption ends. It ends on the date specified in the ordinance or when the improvements that are specified are paid up in full, whichever is first. Now there's evidence in the record, there's testimony, and I pointed it out in my brief, that the improvements under the TIF, they were actually done in very quickly, within a year or two after the TIF was enacted. So you could make an argument, frankly, that the exemption ended then, because the exemption ends, between whichever's first, between when these improvements are paid for or when the date specified in the ordinance. But even taking a conservative view on that, you can say, look, we'll look at the date of the ordinance. It's 16 years. So we've got that. And one other point about if we're going to talk about the
Mr. Kim.
Yes, sir.
You would concede that the 1999 entry by the tax commissioner does have a couple of errors in it with respect to the earlier ordinance passed by Obetz, right? It talked about 100% instead of a 25% exemption, but then it said 30 years when it was only 16, I thought.
Well, certainly it does say 100% instead of 25 as what the ordinance said, and the tax commissioner's the final determination, the one that's at issue here, the 2018 one, it acknowledged that the 99 FD was, you know, was an erroneous in that effect. But the rest of it, Your Honor, it's not inconsistent with what the ordinance says, because the FD, and I've got it right in front of me, it's very clear on multiple occasions. It says the tax commissioner consents to the requested exemption. The exemption will end on the earlier, as you pointed out, the earlier of 30 years or the date in which the city can no longer require. And then here's the point that neither of you touched on. And it says, and with such limitations as comport with the provisions set forth in 570940 and the relevant municipal ordinance. Again, we go back to the ordinance. Everything we're talking about here always funnels back to what's in the ordinance. The tax commissioner is free to is bound to consent or reject what's in the ordinance, but it has to go with what's in the ordinance.
Let me probe that a little bit, because certainly the auditor's duties are driven by what the tax commissioner says in the tax commissioner's entries, right? The tax commissioner says whether or not property should or should not be on the exempt list.
Yeah, yes, Your Honor, and that is true. And to the extent that Mr. Reed wants to argue that because the auditor acted, the tax commissioner should have acted in kind, that's backwards. Yes, like you just said, the auditor has to act in conjunction with what the tax commissioner says. There is one little extra codicil here that I should point out, not to muck up the situation, but also to point it out. The TIF that the village wanted to amend only provided 25% exemption for 16 years. There was a second ordinance that the village enacted shortly after that first 97-1 that was provided for 75% exemption for about 15 years. And so the combination of the two provided for 100% exemption for at least for 15 years. So for 15 years, in the auditor's eyes, we're talking about 100% exemption. So there's that extra complicating factor. But then again, once the TIF, the original ordinance of 97, the 25% one, once that expired after 16 years, the auditor should have moved it onto the tax list. Now, the fact that he did or did not, that doesn't bind the tax commissioner in terms of his exemption decisions, because his exemption decision is what's key here. And in terms of the estoppel doctrine, the estoppel doctrine is based on what the tax commissioner does, not what the auditor's office does or what the auditor's office might have said to the village and their lawyers. I should point out that when Mr. Reed was quoting from emails, talking and discussing the emails in his opening, all the emails he was talking about were emails from the auditor's office. And that point needs to be clear. There are references in certain things to conversations with the tax department, but all the statements that he made that he referred to are statements that were made by a representative of the auditor's office. And so we fleshed that out at the BTA, putting aside temporarily that there was no jurisdiction over that issue, over the estoppel issue. We fleshed that out very thoroughly at the BTA because there was no, we actually brought the person that was referenced at the BTA in those emails to testify at the BTA. And her testimony was very clear that she did not make any statements that suggested to the village that, hey, well, you could do this in the way that you seem to think that you can't. But all this talk about the 99 FD, Your Honor, kind of leads us astray only in the sense that there's two things that we need to be clear about with respect to the 99 FD. One is that this action, this appeal is not about enforcing the 99 FD. It's about reviewing OBETS's 2017 application, the 2018 FD by the tax commissioner denying the exemption and the BTA affirming. And the BTA lacked jurisdiction over any discussion of the 99 FD anyway, because OBETS never presented it as an error in its notice of appeal. This is not a situation where the BTA or the tax commissioner and the BTA can review any issue just because it might be relevant to something that is relevant and properly presented. The tax commissioner and BTA, in terms of its review, they're creatures of statute. And the whole point of the notice requirement, or in terms of the specifying error in a notice of appeal, it's that to make sure that arguments and issues are presented and adjudicated by the tax commissioner in the first instance, and then by the PTA, because we're talking about an administrative process. There's nothing in the notice, in the BTA notice of appeal, to clue in anyone that the notion of estoppel or some equity-based argument would be properly raised before the BTA. Because the arguments, what they raise in the notice of appeal, are statutory questions. They allege in their BTA notice of appeal, 570940G wasn't interpreted correctly. 5709B wasn't interpreted correctly. That's it. There's nothing in there about, oh, well, the tax commission or the village relied detrimentally on anyone else, or the 99FD should be sacrosanct here. There's none of those types of arguments. Those are not statutory arguments anyway. So there's nothing that would signal those arguments in the BTA notice of appeal. There's a reason why that requirement exists, and it's based in the fact that the BTA and the tax commissioner are creatures of statute, and are limited by that in terms of what it can do and what it can review. But you know, since we're here and we're talking about the 99FD, you know, it's we know that the tax commissioner said what he said in the 99FD. And it's unfortunate that document remained, but it's also important to realize, one, that it was very clear in that final determination that it intended to comport with the terms of the TIF. It said it multiple times in multiple instances, and as the tax commissioner noted in his final the 28 final determination, and as the BTA noted, the tax commissioner can't lawfully exceed what was put in the TIF in the first place, because it's the municipality's legislative authority that sets the terms of the TIF. The tax commissioner must make a final determination, exemption decision, approving or denying, but it has to be tied to what's in the TIF. So nowhere in the statutes does the tax commissioner have authority to exceed or add to what's provided in the ordinance. And the other point here is that I asked at the hearing, or about one day before the BTA hearing, Mr. Reed or his co-counsel, I can't remember who, reached out to me and asked me for a copy of the 99FD. I provided to them, and they had it. It was properly admitted as an exhibit, without objection on my part. And then we talked about it at the BTA hearing. Their solicitor, I guess Eugene Hollins is their the village's attorney. I guess he's their solicitor. I asked him at the BTA hearing, "Had you seen this before? Did you know what was in here?" He said, "No, there was no reliance on that document," and so let alone that it was detrimentally so. There was no actual reliance on that document. And the last thing then I'll say for now is that, if in fact the village is arguing that, well, the tax commissioner should have granted the exemption to conform to the 99FD, why did they apply for exemption in the first place? The record is clear, Your Honor, that they understood and they believed that the exemption was going to expire. It's clear in their interactions with the auditor's office. It's clear in their own village meeting minutes that are in the record and that point out in the briefs. They say, "Hey, this thing's going to expire." There may have been a quibble or dispute or some uncertainty about when it was going to expire, but this whole machination of an exemption application was started. This whole train was started precisely because they thought it was going to expire, and now that they're arguing, "Oh, well, it should have been 30 years all along." Well, if it was going to be 30 years all along, they had no need to apply for an exemption again. So with that, unless Your Honor has any other questions, I would simply close by saying that the tax commissioner asked that the that the court affirmed the PTA's decision.
Let me ask you just one thing real quick. The original TIF agreement, in which Goodyear back then was the property owner, that's not in the record. Am I right about that?
No, that's it is in the record, Your Honor. I actually looked when Mr. Reed was speaking. It was in the transcript. A copy of it was in the transcript. And regardless, even if it wasn't in the transcript, as certified, they introduced it at hearing, and it's an exhibit. So I mean, it's in there on multiple occasions. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Kim.
All right. Thank you.
We'll go back to Mr. Reed, and Mr. Reed, could you take 1 minute of rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, the Village of Obetz is perplexed why the Department of Taxation wants to fight us so hard on this. There's no good public policy why we should not be allowed to amend and extend this TIF. It happens all the time. The department wants to disavow what the 1999 federal final determination says. It clearly says 30 years. So there's something that went awry here. And let me deal with one subject, Your Honor. The state says, well, the village can't rely on this argument or that argument, specifically detrimental reliance, because it wasn't put in their notice of appeal, did it August 10th, 2018. Let me tell you why that doesn't fly. All right, first of all, on December 11th, 2018, about 5 months before this hearing, we put our exchange of exhibits to an assistant attorney general named Zach Stackhouse. The purpose of this rule that the state has cited is to prevent unfair surprise to the Department of Tax, so that if they see an obvious mistake, they can correct it. They know what the argument is. So the Board of Tax Appeals is on notice of what the argument is. Number two, the hearing occurred April 8th, 2019. The emails from Stephanie Stoltz-Weinkoop were identified by Ms. Stoltz-Weinkoop. I didn't call her as a witness, the state did. The state called her as a witness. They were introduced into evidence. They were admitted by the hearing officer. The case law supports promissory estoppel, Armway versus Lindley. That was actually made an exhibit at the hearing. So there's no argument that this was an unfair surprise. And the fifth—
If you could finish up with about one sentence, Mr. Reed.
In all the cases where an argument was precluded, it was because that argument was not raised during the evidentiary hearing before the board, and the Board of Tax Appeals did not oppose it. But here, the hearing officer and the board and their decision dealt with promissory estoppel. You can't have it both ways, Your Honor. Bell can't be unrung. Thank you, Your Honor.
Your time has expired. Thank you very much. This case will be submitted to the court, and the court will advise the parties of its decision. Would the marshal please adjourn the court?
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.